This is the Thanks for Sharing podcast, the podcast where we explore all things recovery, healing, and relationship.
Remember to subscribe and download episodes in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on the Podbean app.
You can find more Thanks for Sharing at www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/healingpaths. That's paths with an S.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Thanks for Sharing podcast. I'm Jackie P.
I'm John T.
So we are continuing our episodes looking into various big books, different fellowships, but the same steps.
Yep. So it's step three today. And step three reads, depending on the fellowship, it reads something like, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand God. Right?
Mm-hmm. Something like that. Yeah.
So let's dive in. I've got the 12 and 12 here from AA. And I think this is the one. Oh, I really liked this this analogy here where they're going to talk about dependence versus independence. So they say, this is on page 36 of the 12 and 12. Let's examine for a moment this idea of dependence at the level of everyday living. In this area, it's startling to discover how dependent we really are and how unconscious of that dependence. Every modern house has electric wiring carrying power and light to its interior. We are delighted with this dependence. Our main hope is that nothing will ever cut off the supply of current. By so accepting our dependence upon this marvel of science, we find ourselves more independent personally. Not only are we more independent, but we are even more comfortable and secure. Power flows just where it is needed. Silently and surely, electricity, that strange energy so few people understand, meets our simplest daily needs. It is our most desperate ones, too. Ask the polio sufferer who's confined to an iron lung and who depends on with complete trust upon the motor to keep the breath of life in him. But the moment our mental or emotional independence is in question, how differently we behave, how persistently we claim the right to decide all by ourselves what we shall think and how we shall act. Oh yes, we've weighed the pros and cons of every problem. We'll listen politely to those who would advise us, but all decisions are to be ours alone. Nobody is going to meddle in our personal independence in such matters. Besides, we think, there is no one who we can surely trust. We are certain that our intelligence, backed by our willpower, can rightly control our inner lives and guarantee us success in the world we live in. This brave philosophy, wherein each man plays God, sounds good in the speaking, but it has to meet the acid test. How well does it actually work? One good look in the mirror ought to be answer enough for any alcoholic. I really like that. Carnes says that good work is done in therapy in the contradictions. Mm-hmm. I really like that contradiction of how much we depend on, and that dependence gives us independence, but the moment we're setting that limit of dependence,
right,
or turning it over, we'll fight it tooth and nail.
Yeah, I like that too. Also in the 12 and 12, it talks about how practicing step three is like the opening of a door, which to all appearances is still closed and locked. All we need is a key and the decision to swing the door open. There is only one key, and it is called willingness. Once unlocked by willingness, the door opens almost of itself.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that kind of goes along with that. You know, once we start to control how we're dependent or independent, it doesn't work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There's that willingness, and the door will open itself.
Mm-hmm. That was something, I forget which book it was that I was reading in, but it talked about how the key word in step three is willingness. We're not committing to it. We're not mm-hmm. doing it every day. And they said
certain of it.
Yeah, that's actually something that gets worked out in the following nine steps.
Mm-hmm.
But in step three, we start to conceptualize that there may be a power greater than ourselves that mm-hmm. we may be willing to mm-hmm. turn our will over to.
Also in the 12 and 12, it says, to every worldly and practical minded beginner, this step looks hard, even impossible. No matter how much one wishes to try, exactly how can they turn their will over? Okay, it says the male pronoun, so I'm just going to use it that way. No matter how much one wishes to try, exactly how can he turn his own will and his own life over to the care of whatever God he thinks there is? Fortunately, we who have tried it, and with equal misgivings, can testify that anyone at all can begin to do it. We can further add that a beginning, even the smallest, is all that is needed. Once we have placed the key of willingness in the lock and have the door ever so slightly open, we find that we can always open it some more. Though self-will may slam it shut again, as it frequently does, it will always respond the moment we again pick up the key of willingness.
I see a lot of people struggle with steps 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
And something that Ken Adams said at a symposium a couple years ago kind of stood out to me as one of the answers to that question. He said, the first God of our understanding is our parents.
Mm-hmm.
And in A Gentle Path Through the 12 Steps by Patrick Carnes on page 132, he explains a little bit about this relationship between our parents and the God of our understanding. He says, being willing to ask for and accept help and being able to trust that others will help you are central to living a spiritual life. Many addicts are unwilling or unable to ask for help because of our painful experiences growing up. We may have been shamed or punished for asking for help, or people may have simply ignored or discounted us. If people failed to help us when we asked them for help we genuinely needed, it's no surprise that we have trouble asking for help now. Think back to when you were young, in your family, who was safe to ask for help and who was not? When people did provide help, how did they give it? How helpful were they? Do you often have to figure things out on your own? I know for me in working step 3, it was really important to compare and contrast my parents to everything else.
Mm.
And the experience I had with early caregivers to everything else. And it was a really, like, the universe opened up when I realized that there could be another concept of someone who would care for me.
Mm-hmm.
And be there for me. But I think that template that's set by our parents in our early relationships, it's like, you know, the fish that swims in water and doesn't realize it's water.
Right.
We don't
right.
really realize it's there until maybe we realize that we can challenge that, mm-hmm. or we can change it.
I was working with a client this morning in a session, and we were working on the three circles of recovery, which is a big part of SAA, and defining what's the inner circle, which, you know, is restarting the sobriety date if you violate inner circle behaviors, and the middle circle. And as we were talking about the middle circle and what goes in the middle circle, I said to him, one of the hardest parts of the middle circle is these are the behaviors we ask for help on.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us have learned that asking for help results in disappointment, feelings of abandonment, more fear, more rejection. And so, you know, it's that they're not relapses, but they're slips. And when we have a slip, we need help in ensuring our footing. We need mm-hmm. help in, you know, so we need to be able to say, hey, I need to let you know this happened, or, you know, I just got contacted by somebody who was an acting out partner.
Mm-hmm.
I need to let you know that. Like, in those, that middle circle, we are asking for help.
Mm-hmm.
And, or being accountable to somebody with what's going on to us. And we generally don't have a good history with that, which makes that difficult. So in the SAA, what it says, that the Green Book talks about, the third step is a turning point. In taking this step, we find the willingness to allow a God of our understanding to work in our lives. Having accepted both the reality of our disease and the possibility that a higher power can help us where our own efforts have failed, we make a leap of faith, turning to that power for assistance. Taking the third step means acting on our belief that a higher power can relieve our addiction and restore us to sanity. We loosen the grip on our old destructive patterns, perhaps not knowing yet what will replace them. But in the faith that something better will be revealed. When we surrender our old way of living to a power greater than ourselves, we don't always know where we're going, but we can be sure that it will be better than where we were. What does it mean to turn over our will in our lives? We can think of our will as our plans and intentions, what we want to do with our lives. We can think of our lives as the carrying out of our intentions, the full scope of everything we actually do, think, and say. We turn our will and our lives over to the care of God because our self-directed thoughts and actions have so often led us to acting out negative consequences and despair. How can we accomplish this turning over? We may be afraid of taking this step. It may even seem impossible to surrender control and allow a caring higher power to direct our lives. But it is helpful to remember that all we are doing is making a decision to turn our will and our lives over. At this point in our program, we are simply willing to move forward. We decide to make a commitment to recovery and to our spiritual growth. For most of us, the actual turning over of our will and our lives to the care of God will take place gradually through working the remaining 9 steps. With surrender, we say goodbye to our old way of life and prepare to make a transition to the new. Letting go of our addiction can be like losing a familiar friend. For most of our lives, our addiction was there to comfort us and distract us from our problems. Facing life without acting out involves feelings of grief and loss, but it can be done through faith in a power greater than ourselves and in the company of others who walk the same path.
I like how it highlights how scary that is to let go of what we know. And I remember for me, there was a large swath of my life where I couldn't fathom that it could have been any different, that I could feel any different, that I could function any different. And so, like, in my mind, it was like, why would I let go of this? There's nothing else outside of this.
Right.
And when I started going to the rooms of recovery and I started hearing from people who were recovering from addiction, it's like it planted this little worm in my ear that was like, these people have a life that's different than mine.
Mm-hmm.
These people have started where I'm starting at, and now they're somewhere different. And I started to get some of that willingness, like, well, maybe if they let go of this and something better was there, maybe that will be there for me. But some of my favorite words from the ACA Big Book, whenever it talks about, or in the promises, or in, it's in the promises, it'll say slowly, gradually, eventually, over time.
Yep.
That's where this, I think, can't stress enough the concept of willingness here. We're not committing to wholesale change in our life. We're saying we're willing to take the step, one step
and
at a time.
And I found for me, and this goes with the third step, it was a really powerful phrase to repeat to myself when I felt stuck or confused or just, you know, at that place of not knowing what was the next right step, to be able to just say to myself, more will be revealed. That felt like a surrender. It felt like a trust in something besides myself. And I really found that a very powerful thing to say to myself is more will be revealed.
And that's what, when Carver came and did Back to Basics, and shameless plug, you can see the entirety of this on our website under the events tab. When Carver came to do Back to Basics, he said recovery for him is just a series of surrenders.
Yep.
You get to the edge of what you know and what you can do, and you make a surrender.
Yep.
And then your higher power comes in and helps you and reveals more. And then you go to the edge of what that shows you, and then you make another surrender.
Yeah.
I think step three is less about a willingness to accept that there's a higher power defined a certain way, and more about the willingness to one surrender after another.
Yeah, I love that idea of the series of surrenders that gets us to somewhere that's different, that all of a sudden we've made this transition. But for most of us, we don't, like, we may know we need a transition, but the whole word transition implies we don't know.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we're transitioning into unknown territory. And so that idea of just being a series of surrenders that we keep making is powerful.
let's jump now to Recovering Couples Anonymous. And I'm on page 23 of the RCA Big Book. It says, many couples go on a spiritual quest. I like this because it outlines some of the things that we might do to learn about the higher power of our own understanding. So it says, many couples go on a spiritual quest as part of their third step. Spiritual quests vary widely, but could include the following. Start each day with Thanksgiving, reading spiritually significant literature together, meditating, going to a house of worship or other spiritually significant place, going to recovery groups, praying, going on a spiritual retreat together. These quests could take days, months, or even years. We hope that your own spiritual outlook as a couple will be deepened. We encourage you to write down a quest agreement. This could be in longhand or printed, suitable for framing and witnessed by friends or your sponsors. This is truly a warm, supportive, and validating experience for all involved. Additionally, we suggest that you chair an RCA step meeting and you share your experience, strength, and hope with other couples. A while ago, I don't remember. Oh, it was after Back to Basics last summer, because that was life changing. when Carver was talking about studying the steps is good, but study doesn't change us. It's working the steps that does. So, you know, I've seen clients and I've seen people in recovery spend a lot of time on this step, getting very philosophical and very analytical about exactly what their higher power needs to be. And they get stuck because they neglect the steps that help them to experience a higher power of their understanding, not just to think about one.
Well, and I liked this idea in, this was just a sentence in RCA, Recovering Couples Anonymous, and it relates to couples, but it also relates to individuals. And it says, placing our relationship in our higher power's hands would mean the end of power struggles and control. I really like that, because so often we can find ourselves in a power struggle. And if we're working step three, that surrender, whether we're surrendering our relationship, you know, and as an individual, if you're not in a relationship, you have a lot of relationships you're in.
Yeah.
With coworkers, colleagues, family members, whatever. But that idea that as we're working step three and we're turning our will over to the care of God, we are getting out of our own power struggles and that need for control.
You know, when you read that, there was a little part of me that said, but if I don't struggle for power, where is it going to come from? Like, and again, that as I work the steps over and over again, there's just like there's more corners that need to be cleaned out, and there's more that needs to be got to. And again, there's that belief that power only comes when we fight for it and when we win it. It can't come from anywhere else.
Yeah. Well, and it goes back to what you first read at the beginning of this episode about it, as we become dependent on a higher power, we become more independent. And independent carries a lot of power with it.
And I, you know, one of the things that I think I've talked on this podcast before about my experience at the first module for CSAT training. And I remember feeling this like wonderful, terrible anxiety about knowing that this kind of work was my calling and this is what I needed to do. Because I recognized as I pursued more training and as I did this work to the best of my ability, there was going to be power that came with that. And I think of, I think it's in Spider-Man, they talk about with great power comes great responsibility. And again, there's that part of me that says, do we really want the responsibility that comes with this power? And I think that's a big part of step three, is that as we start to connect with the power, I don't think there's a higher power. It, at least my concept of a higher power is not that this higher power lays out, okay, now that you've got this power, here's the things that you have to do. I think it's more my conscience and my development says, what I've been given, I need to freely give. Or when I know what I know, I need to act in accordance with that, because misalignment doesn't feel good.
And that humility or a humbleness comes in stepping into that responsibility or that trust.
So having a conversation with my wife, I think in the last week, there's some things that we're facing right now in our family that have been difficult. And we were kind of laughing the other night. And I think it was like that laughing, crying, and we were saying, I wish we could go back to the days before recovery when we could just be nasty in this, or we could just be irresponsible in this, or we could be victims.
Just only see it from our perspective.
Right.
And to hell with any other perspective.
Right. Because we were saying, like, this is so hard to be, to continue extending compassion and extending the benefit of the doubt.
And be responsible in what you say.
And slowing down, because it would feel really good to just fire back right now and say what's on my mind. But it's one of those things, like, I think, and again, I think I've talked about this before, I'm always sad for my clients when they get to that point where they can't unsee what they've seen now. And life will forever be different. I think that's one of the things that the third step promises. As we cultivate that willingness, we will see things that we can't unsee, and that will be life-changing.
In fact, I have one of the big books, let me look for it, where it talks about Third Step Promises in NA, Narcotics Anonymous. Says, as addicts, we turned our will and our lives over many times to a destructive power. Our will and our lives were controlled by drugs. We were trapped by our need for instant gratification that drugs gave us. During that time, our total being, body, mind, and spirit, was dominated by drugs. For a time, it was pleasurable. Then the euphoria began to wear off and we saw the ugly side of addiction. We found that the higher our drugs took us, the lower they brought us. We faced two choices. Either we suffered the pain of withdrawal or took more drugs. We made the decision. It was not made for us by the drugs, our families, a probation officer, judge, therapist, or doctor. We made it. For the first time since that first high, we have made a decision for ourselves. We have only to believe that the miracle that we see working in the lives of clean addicts can happen to any addict with the desire to change. We simply realize there is a force for spiritual growth that can help us become more tolerant, patient, and useful in helping others. Although we know that turning it over works, we may still take our will and life back. We may even get angry because God permits it. At times during our recovery, the decision to ask for God's help is our greatest source of strength and courage. We cannot make this decision often enough. We surrender quietly and let the God of our understanding take care of us. If we are thorough and sincere, we will notice a change for the better. Our fears are lessened. Here's where we get to the third step promises. Our fears are lessened, and faith begins to grow as we learn the true meaning of surrender. We are no longer fighting fear, anger, guilt, self-pity, or depression. We realize that the power that brought us to this program is still with us and will continue to guide us if we allow it. We are slowly beginning to lose the paralyzing fear of hopelessness. The proof of this step is shown in the way we live.
That reminds me, I forget where this came from for me. It might have just been a thought for me, and it was one of those changes in my concept of a higher power that was pretty radically different than before, is understanding that the power that I believe in isn't greedy. That power is not going to reach into my life and remove things that I'm not willing to have removed, or to change things that I'm not willing to have changed, at least about myself. But that power is ever ready when I'm ready to surrender it, and I'm ready to show that wound or to show that pain to that power. That power will pick it up and will hold it with me. And so I like that line. It made me laugh when he said we're angry sometimes that God lets us, lets us choose, because God permits it.
Yeah.
And that was a big, like, it went from this understanding of God as this parent who more often than not was very disapproving of what I was doing.
And controlling
to God as this fellow traveler, this person who would be there with me and was completely willing to help, but wasn't going to overstep his bounds.
That idea of God that's saying, well, I don't think that's a good idea, but maybe go for it. Let's see what happens on the other end.
Why don't you go try that out? It's like when my kids were little and they were playing with the hose in the yard and they, you know, it has the attachment on the top, the sprayer, and they've got it pointed at their face and you can tell that the wheels are turning. Like, I'm going to squeeze this. It's like, may not be a good idea, but you probably need to learn that for yourself.
From the Al-Anon book, it says here, it gets into the definition of will. So it starts out saying, deciding to turn to a power greater than ourselves for help may seem like a tremendous gamble, but really, what do we have to lose? We know that our old self-reliance and determination have let us down again and again. It only makes sense to try another way. We make a decision, a commitment to take all of our concerns and feelings, worries, fears, resentments, loves, dreams, wishes, thoughts, choices, and relationships. That's a big definition of will.
Right.
In short, our will and our lives, and place them in the care of the God of our understanding. We don't have to figure anything out, know what the results will be, or even feel comfortable letting go of our efforts to control. When we take the third step and make this decision, we place ourselves in a position in which, no matter what happens in our lives, we can trust that we will be guided and cared for. We are no longer in charge. By placing ourselves in the care of the God of our understanding, we put ourselves in much more capable hands.
And I think it takes some work to be willing to believe that hands other than ours are capable enough, because we've been alone for so long. There's another aspect to this. I'm going to read from the ACA Big Book. This is on page 141. And this is one of the, so in the ACA big book, the beginning of every step, there's a bunch of shares. These are experiences from actual members of ACA. I want to share one of the shares and then read a little bit of the text there. So the name of this share is Getcha God or Actual Parent. It says, I struggled with the third step because I had confused my violent and shaming father with God. I thought God was a super powerful being living in the far reaches of outer space, keeping score of all my bad thoughts and actions. I had a Getcha God who I believed would get me for my imperfect behavior. I gave up on God and told people an agnostic because it sounded cool. I lived my life in an endless cycle of harmful relationships, lost job, and jobs and lost friends. I could never be a friend, actually. I stopped getting into relationships to stop the pain. I had no choice. I was compulsive and getting more out of control with each passing year. When I came to ACA, I saw the third step and wanted no part of God. I worked step one and attended meetings. I tried to keep an open mind, but I was angry at God. The second step and the solution helped me to open my mind more about God. Step two mentions a higher power and asks me to consider the notion of a loving, benevolent force. The solution says that our actual parent is a higher power whom some of us choose to call God. It says the higher power gave us the 12 steps of recovery. Through the years, I have come to believe that I am lovable. I have replaced my Getcha God with the actual parent who will never abandon me. My parents were the biological couple bringing me into the world. My actual parent is a God of my understanding. I have a choice today, and I put my will and life in the hands of this God. This God listens. And then on the next page, 142, it says, these step three shares represent the sovereign right of every adult child to choose the God of his or her understanding. For the first time in our lives, we finally think about a higher power, that what a higher power means to us, rather than relying on what we've been told. Step two gave us the insight into how many of us came to perceive a punishing and indifferent God. In step three, we opened our minds to new possibilities.
That's a powerful statement, that sovereign right. Yeah. You know, in the United States, we talk a lot about sovereign rights. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe not, but in certain classes, we might.
Right.
But we, you know, our country is founded on some sovereign rights. Mm-hmm. And that's a powerful statement to say we have this sovereign right to basically fire the God that was given to us. Mm-hmm. And come to an understanding of a God that actually works in our behalf.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, accepting the God that was given to you without investigation, without choice, I think for a lot of people in recovery, that continues a trauma cycle. Mm-hmm. Where there's not consent to this relationship.
Right.
And I think step three is pretty critical because we start to exercise our consent in the powers that govern our lives or the powers that we choose to let in. Uh-huh. Rather than just accepting what was given us.
Yeah. I want to read from the big book, AA big book, and then I want to go back to ACA because there's so much in here that I love. In AA big book, it says, so our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter, in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arc through which we passed to freedom. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed, if we kept close to him and performed his work well. We were now at step three. Many of us said to our Maker, as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. That's obviously the third step prayer. So again, I like that idea of where AA calls out that many of us play God.
Well, it's a natural follow-up to steps one and two, where we look at the mess that we've made of our mm-hmm. lives, and we start to get that idea in our head that we alone are not going to fix this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a natural follow-up to start to consider hiring somebody else to mm-hmm. run our lives.
Yeah. Well, and going back to that idea that if our first higher power was our parents,
mm-hmm.
and that really didn't work for us and caused some problems, of course we became our own higher power.
Yeah.
Like, of course we did. But that also created a lot of problems.
Yeah.
And we have to stop playing God.
Yeah.
Did you have more out of the ACA?
I mean, I could read that whole chapter. It's really good.
Right.
But that's all that I had selected.
Okay. So I liked this in ACA where it talked about, it says, we start with the premise that we are whole and that we had a normal reaction to an abnormal situation of being raised in a dysfunctional home. Our normal reaction to protect ourselves has created survival traits, compulsions, and self-harming behaviors which respond to the ACA steps and spiritual remedies. In ACA, we believe we were born whole and became fragmented in body, mind, and spirit through abandonment and shame. We need help finding a way to return to our miracle state. I thought that was really powerful, that just kind of said we had a normal reaction to an abnormal situation.
I mean, that's revolutionary to start to think that your connection with a higher power doesn't start from this very broken and distorted place. It
right.
starts from, I'm reacting in a way that makes sense.
Right. And that got me to survive in a situation in which I wasn't being cared for the way I needed to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. We've kind of talked about the control that it talks about. It says here, asking a higher power for help is not easy for adult children for many reasons. We knew asking for help as children was risky and could be quashed by parents who would not allow such talk. We were told we were selfish or immature if we asked for help. We were told to be quiet. At other times, we were taught to doubt our perception of what was happening. By the time we reached adulthood, most of us avoided asking for help, thinking we were self-sufficient and beyond such needs. This attitude can be a major stumbling block for adult children trying to call upon God to heal the disease of family dysfunction in their lives. Many adult children can play God by being philosophical about the origin of people, the cosmos, mysticism. Isn't that funny? we use this knowledge to avoid getting involved in our own lives. You know, how we disconnect and use intellect to avoid anything in the body or anything in the spirit.
Well, and that's so underlying to step three, like, get out of your head about it and go practice something.
Right. And it says, people came to us for our knowledge on spiritual matters, but we may feel phony because we realize we are not getting our own needs met. We only have ourselves to turn to for help. We cling to control. We have become knowledge gods, sealed off from others.
Hmm.
In one of these, I had written down when I was... In one of the times I was listening to Carver talk, and he said this, I mean, and it's a Carverism because he's just funny this way. He says, we went to church like they were giving away prizes.
I think that examining that fervor, or examining, like, why am I so invested in this is mm-hmm. really important in steps two and three. And if it's because it gives us, I should say in my experience, if it's because it gives me this special knowledge or this special insight, I think I'm missing the boat.
Yeah.
Because I think the spiritual things that I choose to engage in can increase my knowledge, my insight, but it's knowledge and insight about me, not about something that I'm disconnected from.
Right. So ACA also says, we must ask for help if we are to break out of isolation and join humanity. We can't just talk about it. We have to let go of control and do it.
Mm-hmm.
We make a decision to ask someone to help us and then accept the help once it is offered. We cannot recover alone. Then it gives us this counsel. Don't worry about wearing out step three. This step is a bottomless well of hope, which is needed to deal with our fear-based attempts to control ourselves and others. As we work the remainder of the 12 steps, we will invariably struggle with control and self-doubt. Such struggles are only natural since we relied on controlling our feelings and emotions to survive in our homes and relationships. Control meant a sense of safety and predictability. However, we surrendered much of our personality and spirit through this manner of living. In step three, we begin the gradual and gentle process of easing off of stifling control and replacing it with emotional freedom. In step three, we deepen our knowledge of how we have battled with control and with a higher power most of our lives. Many adult children hoped for God's grace or intervention, but we never seemed capable of truly letting go and letting God work in our lives. We shamed ourselves for being unable to let go and truly have faith and belief. We thought we were incapable of having meaningful faith. We forgot what many of us heard as children: God loves us always. Choice is God's gift for letting go. We let go of control by asking for what we need instead of manipulating others for things we really don't want. By letting go of control, we continue on the path to greater choice. With choice, we find out what we like and dislike. We feel less compelled to repeat rituals of control to make it through the day. We choose a new coffee shop, or we enroll in a college course and learn to explore the world around us. We choose to take singing lessons or volunteer for a worthy cause. We get our hands dirty in gardening, or we let dust collect on the ledge longer without dusting compulsively. We see the art in spilled milk on the countertop. Before we arrived at ACA, we had no real choice. We were dependent or addicted to drugs, food, sex, or work without a sense of direction. Most of us were reactors locked into unchangeable behavior. With ACA's spiritual focus on addressing the disease of family dysfunction, we break the cycle. We replace rigidity and fear with hope. We realize that the path of great choice is a spiritual path that begins at denial and no choice and progress, and progresses through greater levels of choice to discernment. The level of choice we develop in ACA is proportional to the integrity of our boundaries. The more we let go, the stronger our boundaries become. This is an ACA paradox. Letting go creates stronger boundaries. While we realize God's love in step three, we acknowledge that many adult children have been spiritually abused and struggle with a concept of God in addition to struggling with control. The emotional and spiritual damage created by such acts of betrayal are staggering for some. We urge these ACA members to keep an open mind and to be gentle with themselves as they work the ACA steps to find a God of their understanding. We believe our best hope is seeking a spiritual solution in concert with other recovering adult children.
I like that. Choice is God's gift for letting go.
Yeah.
Because I think at one of the centers of addiction is we're unable to let go of what we need to let go of and mm-hmm. to welcome in what we need to welcome in.
Yeah. And I like that paragraph where it talks about, you know, it gets us into some of our maybe playful things that we couldn't develop mm-hmm. because of the dysfunctional system in which we were living as kids. Mm-hmm. So, you know, allowing ourselves to take singing lessons mm-hmm. or, you know, to get our hands dirty mm-hmm. in gardening or, you know, just do different things. You know, find a new coffee shop, enroll in a course and learn something that you're interested in. I think childhood is so much about exploring. Mm-hmm. And for many of us ACA, it wasn't safe to explore.
Yeah.
Because we had to be on our toes mm-hmm. so that we could keep safe.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a pretty good place to pause on step three. So we want to remind you that your story matters, and remember there's something meaningful in every chapter. Don't wait to share your story until it's finished.
You can share your story with us on our Facebook page, Healing Paths, Inc., or on our website, www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com.
Thanks for listening.
This podcast is solely for the purpose of information and entertainment and does not constitute therapy, nor should it replace competent professional help.
At the end of another episode, we want to remind you that nobody has time for perfection. We are pursuing progress.
And remember the prayer of the perfectionist. Help me remember I can't do it all. Help me to take things one step at a time, and that the only step I need to focus on is the next right step for me.
Help me to remember that life is a journey. Help me to be able to separate all that I am learning from all that I have to do. Help me to remember that I am not alone, that I can ask for help. Help me to strive for frequent awakenings, not mastery. I am enough. Amen.